RŠ intervju.
Urbanizacija na Kitajskem in njene žrtve, ki uradno ne obstajajo. Danes nas bo v RKHV intervjuju s pomočjo medmrežja obiskal avtor dokumentarnega filma Nova doba, angleško A New Era, Boris Schwarzman. Film smo si prejšnji mesec lahko ogledali na festivalu etnografskega filma, Schwarzman pa ni samo filmar, temveč tudi fotograf in sociolog. Sam pravi, da so ta tri področja njegovega dela, ko pride do filmskega ustvarjanja, zelo prepletena, kar se jasno kaže tudi v Novi dobi. Film prikazuje Sizifov boj kitajskega kmeta proti državi, ki vlada komunistična partija. Slednja želi kmete zaradi nedobičkonosnosti izseliti zemlje, na kateri so živele številne generacije, zrušiti njihove hiše in na njihovem mestu zgraditi luksuzne hotele s 5 zvezdicami. To pa ni zelo tovariško od njih. Schwarzman je 7 obiskoval vaščane, ki so bili nasilno izrinjeni iz svojih domov. Te so na to podrli in prisiljeni podpisati razne dokumente o predaji zemlje. Tisti, ki dokumentov niso podpisali, zdaj živijo v ruševinah. Glede na to, da se Schwarzman tudi v ostalih delih, večinoma so to fotografski projekti, ukvarja s tematiko vpliva urbanizacije na kitajsko podeželje, nas je najprej zanimalo, kaj ga vedno znova pritegne k tej specifični temi, kitajski, in zakaj se je odločil, da bo problematiko, ki zadeva celotno kitajsko podeželje, prikazal ravno specifičnim krajem, ki ga vidimo v filmu.
I've been living in China when I was a kid, and it was in the middle of the 80s, and then I went back there in the 90s, and I already could see the beginning of the transformation of the urbanization plan of China in that period. And then I studied Chinese at the university, and I went back there and I just specialized on this because I was really shocked to see all the places that I knew from my childhood disappearing. And I thought, okay, if I feel this that strong, I think that maybe Chinese inhabitants, they also might live it directly in a really strong way. So I really wondered, how do they live this? And at the beginning, I just worked mainly on the demolition of the old neighborhoods of the big cities like Beijing, Shanghai, Chengdu. And after doing this first work that you saw on my white page, Tabula Rasa, and I discovered that this was only the surface of the urbanization. And in fact, China was mainly a rural country in that period. It was still 80% of the population living in rural areas. And today we've reached more than 50% of the population who is urbanized. And actually, we have the vision of modernization is linked to urbanization because in our societies, Western societies, we faced the rural exodus, people leaving the rural areas and migrate, and they were going to live to cities and becoming workers. But in China, it's different. The situation is, the cities are expanding and they are eating the land of the rural, the people in the rural areas. So every year you have almost 4 million of people in China who lose, peasants who lose their land. And I think this is really something which is completely different from our scheme, because we are used to think, okay, modernization is urbanization, it goes together. But in fact, in China, modernization could have gone a completely different way, helping the peasants to develop their own skills and going in another way of urbanization. But what is going on now is that the government is taking the land of the peasants to use it for other purposes. And it's a forced urbanization. It's not a natural process of the modernization of the society that is finally urbanizing. It's a decision, completely political decision, and completely fake one, because it has no real base on what the people are doing, and the people are not willing to leave. So I first filmed in several villages during 2 years in a lot of regions in China, and I was facing these kind of situations everywhere. But in that specific village, I've been taking pictures before it was demolished. And so I already had some kind of link with them. And also this village has the particularity to be really close from the city, but it was also really preserved because it was on a small island and there was no connection to the mainland. It was no tunnel, no no bridge. So it was really close, and at the same time, it was a typical, really like a village that usually you can see only in remote areas because there was really few cars and all the houses. So this contrast was really interesting, and that's how I started to film only this place, because I thought it's more interesting maybe to focus on one village and from this case to show something which is happening in all China. But to go maybe deeper in one story makes it more obvious to film. And at the beginning, I was filming in a lot of places, but I thought it was maybe too wide and not precise enough, and make really to feel what the people think about their situation. You have to slow down and stay in one place. So yeah, this is like my link to China, and that. And I think the process of urbanization is something really linked to all the Chinese people in the last 30 years. It has been a main, really the you have like a lot of complaints every year there is a system of complaints which is not the judicial system. It's letters you can send, and you try to have some administration to answer you. So it's an extrajudicial system, and. Until 2010, they were publishing the numbers of complaints, and after 2010, they stopped because it's millions and millions every year of complaints from rural areas because of demolitions. So they just stopped publishing it because the numbers were increasing, and we don't know since 10 years how many people are complaining. But it's like I think it's the main problem, social problem in China for the last for the last decades.
Ker smo v pogovoru spoznali, da se na tematiko spozna tudi sociološko-zgodovinskega vidika, smo ga vprašali, ali lahko modernizacijo in z njo povezano urbanizacijo na Kitajskem kontekstualizira. Tam se je namreč, kot je povedal, urbanizacija odvijala bistveno drugače kot na Zahodu, njeni cilji pa so po mnenju Schwarzmana vprašljivi. Meni namreč, da pri urbanizaciji na Kitajskem ne gre samo za povečevanje profitabilnosti zemlje, temveč tudi za politično motivirano rušenje demokratično urejenih vaških skupnosti in njihovo integracijo v lažje in bolj nadzorovana mestna okolja.
The authorities just think, oh, this land is not giving us any money anymore, so just take it and make some profit on it, giving the rights to build a factory, the rights to build a residency, and they just are going blind into a direction which is cement, like concrete, and build, you know, and this is really, really sad for me, but so that's why I say they could have gone a completely different way, and they decided this way, but I think this way is also a way to control the population, because you force them to enter a new way of life, and when you are in the rural community, you are able to vote for your own representatives, and you are able to be part of the community and to decide collectively of, because all this land is owned collectively. You have a share. It's not that you have this land for your whole life. It depends on how many people in the village. So every 15 years, they redistribute the land to the people. And all these things makes the people really aware of what means the commons. And what is the common is a way of, it's a basic democratic knowledge that they are practicing in the countryside. So this is also something really strong when you demolish this and you force the people to live in a urban area. Okay, you give them the property of their new house and they are now owners, but they lose all this community life and something which is a sense of the community and a sense of democracy. And I think there is a political will to destroy these roots of democracy in the rural areas, and the urbanizing is also a way to do it, because you make the space really rationalized, and the people just live in a place which is really easy to control, and you have cameras in the buildings, you have cameras, you have police officers at the entrance of each residency. So yeah, in a way, it's urbanization, in my point of view, is a way to control the population.
Teme, o katerih vaščani pred kamero govorijo Švarcmanom, so zelo občutljive, saj kritizirajo oblast, komunistično partijo in izpostavljajo njene laži. Na Kitajskem obstaja tudi zakon o tako imenovanem razkrivanju občutljivih internih zadev države tujcem, ki je podoben ruskemu zakonu o tujih agentih, kar pomeni, da so vsi, ki so pred kamero spregovorili, tvegali zaporno kazen. Kako je torej Švarcman, bel evropejec, pristopil k tkanju zaupanja in ali je imel pri tem kaj težav?
You don't need to talk a lot. It's just about to gain the trust. It's just about if you are making stupid questions or if the way you behave they don't like, they will don't give you anything. If they see you understood and you know how to behave and that you are not forcing the discussion, but sometimes if they tell you a little bit, but from this little bit you understand that there is something behind and you ask just the right question and then they open more. I mean, it's happening alone. And if at that precise time you didn't make the right question and you're just like, oh, your dog is really beautiful when he's talking to you about something about the community, he will not talk to you anymore about this, but then you will not be able to go deeper. And so it's really about, but at the same time, you have to be, for example, to have interest about what they grow and why do they have dogs. But every question can be a little bit more of information. I think the trust was just happening really naturally. And some people, of course, they didn't want to talk at all. But after a few years, they started to talk, and I didn't even know them because they were hiding when I was there, and suddenly they appeared and they knew me, and I was like, whoa, who are you? And some of them are one of the best characters of the film, like the woman who talks about the, for example, the who gives me a papaya, and then she talks about the police officer she threw. You know, that lady, for example, for years I didn't know who she was. She was just avoiding me, and one day she just came and she said, okay, I know you are doing the things well, and we can talk. And I was like, whoa. And she was impressive, you know, but she really decided when she wanted to talk. And some people were willing to talk. And after maybe one or two times, they told me they were really afraid of the authorities. So they just asked me to not to use the footage in the film. So I didn't use it. And I think this was part of the trust also, because even though they didn't want to be filmed, they changed their mind and they knew just by telling me I would do it. So I didn't use the footage of these people. But for example, some of them give me images on a DVD or USB key, and they had the footage of the demolitions. And I was like, whoa, this is impressive. And I didn't even know who gave it to me, because they were like, oh, someone told me to give this to you. And I was like, okay. And you know, so slowly I became the kind of archivist of the village. And I think this was something really interesting, because it was about getting all this information. It's not only about willing or not to be filmed. It's really important to have these documents, because also the letters they sent to the authorities and the answers of the authorities is something really private. You don't want to share it with anyone, you know, because it's kind of compromising, and you can be accused of divulgating to a foreigner sensitive issues of internal affairs in China, or, you know, they have accusations like this, and they were giving me all this material. So I think this is also a mark of trust, even more than accepting to be filmed.
Bi Švarcman čutil osebno odgovornost, če bi kateri izmed vaščanov padel v nemilost pri oblasti? Kakšen je bil njihov odnos do tega tveganja? Kaj je naredil, da jih je zaščitil?
When I was there, I think that I was more afraid than them. And sometimes I was like, oh, there is a police officer, and I was hiding, and they were like, what are you afraid of? You are my friend. I've already been to jail and I've already been beaten and I have no money and they destroyed my house and now what? I cannot talk to a friend. And you know, like, and I was like, I could feel really like a dump, you know, come on, don't be afraid. But sometimes they were just telling me, okay, you have to leave. And no discussion, I leave, you know, stay in the room behind and wait, they leave, and then come out again. So there were some kind of moments like this. So I don't think there was much problems because, as they told me, they already faced many problems. So I think they were more willing to talk because they were not afraid anymore of anything, you know, and it's not because I was there that they experienced this. And there was even one guy who was beaten to death, and some people spent several months in the hospital, and a lot of them were jailed for 1 year, 2 years. So they were like, you are here, it's nothing more or less, you know. But some of them had some problems, like police officers coming and why did you talk to the foreigner? What did you tell him? Things like this. So they were not making pressure on me; they were making pressure on them. But they were answering the same thing that they told me. And when they were telling me that, I was like, "What did you say to the police officer?" They were like, "Well, the same thing as you. You already demolished my house. You sent me to jail, and what? I cannot talk to a friend." So, and I think the one thing I really took care of in the film is not to mention, namely, the police officers. Because sometimes when they are talking, they say, yeah, you know, that police officer whose name is that, and he was in charge of that position, and now he got a promotion, and he's the head police of that district. So this kind of information, I didn't use it in the film. Because this is really sensitive. They could have more problems for this, you know, and to protect them and also for myself to be able to go back to China. I think these are the things, this is a red line not to cross. So I think I was really, and also, for example, they were saying, the expropriation, the head of the company who is investing in that building, the head of the company, he is the son of a minister, and so there is a concrete link, because otherwise they would never use so much power to just repress some villagers. We are just some villagers, and so why do you think that it's sure that there is a, so? And they were giving names of company of responsible people, so of people in the government, and all these things. I didn't use it in the. This is a really red line not to cross, and the second red line is not to make things like a film like this, not to promote it in China. So, for example, I would love to show it to the villagers, but I didn't send a private link to the villagers because I would go there with my computer and show it to them on the computer, but I would never send a link and say, hey, you can use it, because this would be promotion of anti-communist regime in China. And the problem is what you do in China, not outside of China, you know. So the film has been going in many festivals in the Western countries, but it's not making any consequences because I really I was really careful with these two red lines not to cross, not accuse anyone and not make the promotion in China.
Filmi sicer redko vodijo k večjim družbenim spremembam, ponavadi je njihova vloga ozaveščanje javnosti. Toda film A New Era svojo problematiko ni zares dosegel občinstva, ki bi ga moral ozavestiti, da bi lahko vsaj upal na morebitne spremembe v prihodnosti. Promoviranje filma na Kitajskem bi bilo namreč, kot je povedal Schwarzman, zelo nevarno. Kako avtor sam gleda na to dejstvo? Ga morda frustrira ali so bili njegovi nameni že od začetka popolnoma drugačni?
No, I think you cannot make any change there. And in this specific case, when I was filming, the battle was already lost, because actually the situation is a bit specific, because they are living in the houses of the people living abroad, but then our houses are already destroyed. And actually, at the beginning, my will was more to film and to I was not even sure I wanted to make a film. I wanted to document, let's say. Anyway, photographically or writing or filming, I didn't know what was the good way to do it. But what I wanted to do is to follow the people who live in the new buildings. And I wanted to see how a peasant becomes a new urbanite from one day to another, you know? How a community of... But when I was going to the new buildings, the control was really stronger than in the village. Because in the new buildings, you have 2,000 villagers. So they are just living there, and they are really unhappy. So what I thought is like, okay, it's impossible to film there. I have to wait a few years before I can film them. But I didn't even know there were still people living in the ruins of the village. So I was going there, and these people were there. So I thought, okay, this is an archive. I was not filming thinking I would make a film about them. I was thinking, this is really important to film. Let's just keep an archive and I see later what I do. But year after year, they were still there. So after filming them 2 or 3 years, I thought, okay, maybe it's more than an archive. Maybe this is the film. And at the beginning, it's my first film, it's my debut film, and I didn't study journalism or art school. So video and filmmaking was for me really hard to imagine how I can make a film with all this. I was just collecting footage. For me, it was the more important was to document. So I was just documenting, and I didn't know if these documents could become a film, you know? So I was just like grabbing, collecting information. And after 3 years, I thought, okay, maybe I should start to write a project and see if I can use it. But I think the main vision I had was not to defend, help them, because I knew it was impossible, but it was to be the more discreet I could to document and keep a track, like, because there are millions of peasants who lose their land every year in China, and it's really hard to document because it's really hard to access to these places.
Glede na to, da smo si Švarcmanov film ogledali na festivalu etnografskega filma, smo ga vprašali še, kako sam razume koncept etnografskega filma.
I think ethnographic film can be really different ways. I mean, all the different ways I said could be really interesting ethnographic films. And maybe I would make another film one day, which would be based only on my experience and would be also an ethnographic film. So on my point of view, today, I think it's good that there are festivals of documentary, but I don't really make a big difference between documentary films and ethnographic films. For me, the importance is to have to find the right way to express what you saw from one subject, one topic, and I think there are really good ethnographic films and really boring ones, and there are really good documentary films and really boring ones. But when you look at the programmation, you find that a lot of films which were to big documentary festivals, they are also in ethnographic film festivals. So I think it's more what the organizers of the festival, how they want to name their festival and if they want to have a connotation which for them is more, but I think the question should be more asked to the festival organizers, what did you use ethnographic and not documentary film, you know? But from my point of view, it's what I look for is always the originality of the document, you know, and is it something which really is important, and how did you manage then to express it in an artistical point of view?
Borisu Švarcmanu se za konec zahvalimo za njegov čas, zgovornost in poglobljen pogled v film A New Era. On pa se nam zahvali za radovednost in nam zaželi lep dan. Intervju je s pomočjo Petre pripravil vajenec Lenart.